podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donny Review system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hi everyone, this is Sonaldo from fantasyfootballscout.co.uk. You're now listening to Burning Questions with my co-host Pross and I. If you'd like to check us out live, we stream every Wednesday over on YouTube. Just search for Fantasy Football Scout. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Burning Questions series by Fantasy Football Scout. In this series, Pross and I, Sonaldo, talk about the key hot topics for the week. Pross, I memorized that actually, so it just goes to show this is episode who knows what, but welcome back, Pross. I know you're potting from a different location today. How are you doing and how was your weekend?
Weekend was great, man. We had football. We had some games, seven games, and it was a nice one where people were divergent in their wild cards. They were divergent in their strategies. So it was nice. And for the listeners and viewers, this is going to be a very short one. We wanted to basically check in this week because basically Andy couldn't hold himself. He has a terrific wild card. So we're going to be talking about what went right for his wild card. He's going to finally talk about Sun and what he really thinks about what's going on and whether Sun is an option going forward. And what we'll do is we'll split the pod, right? This week we'll look at backward looking stuff on what happened over the weekend, how the wildcard draft looks, or how your wildcard 8 looks. And then what we'll do next weekend is we'll do forward looking stuff on my wildcard 9. How do we navigate the fixtures after 9, whether you're on wildcard or not? So take it away, Andy. How was your wildcard?
Yeah, I mean, today's episode is going to be short and sweet. We're not doing this pod because of Suns Hall, but that was a game changing kind of, you know, very rare type of experience, because not only did FPL kind of intertwine with the whole, you know, frustration with how Sun's been doing this season. So very, very special moment. I think it just reminded me of why I love football first and foremost. And secondly, why I love FPL as well. And the combination of my favorite player returning a 19 point haul was, just bliss. So fantastic. And in a little kickstart to my FPL campaign as well. You can see I'm a little different in mood from last week. So excited to get the campaign going. But with that being said, there's still a lot of question marks. You know, I'm still not, you know, fully confident in not Sun, but Spurs and Sun and what's going on in terms of FPL. So lots to discuss, lots coming up before the World Cup. So excited to, keep going with you, Pross.
Nice. First, tell me about your thought process. When Paul O'Keefe tweeted at 6 p.m. that he's not in the lineup, what was going in your head? Were you going to remove him? Did you ever contemplate removing, or were you like, I'm just going to trust my gut?
That's great you asked me that, Pross, because I was actually looking back at the state of mind I was in because I think the Keefe tweet came out 30 minutes prior to the deadline, right?
Yeah.
And so basically for like 3 or 4 or 5 or, you know, however many hours, I was so set on having Sessegnon and Sun. I ended up getting Sun and Zuma. If you went Sun, you're probably crazy like me, right? Because the right answer was KDB. I have no doubt about it. And when KDB got off to a hot start in the game week, I probably texted you. I said, oh man, I made the wrong decision. I was too, you know, hard overhead kind of. It's just like that's what FPL is about, right? Because we can plan and plan and plan, and then you have to make these very decisive decisions that can really alter the course of your sort of short-term kind of planning within 30 minutes, right? And so I think within those 30 minutes, I had about 50,000 different thoughts about, you got to go KDB, you got to go Sun, you got to go KDB, you got to go Sun. And in the end, the decision I made was I'll be okay with Sun coming off the bench because I just wanted maybe 20 or 30 minutes of him against Leicester. And I thought that maybe there's a chance KDB doesn't do anything this game, which is ridiculous thinking there. But look, I got lucky in some ways, but I'm also happy I stuck to my guns, regardless of the news that he probably wouldn't start. So that's kind of what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as you remember, I also had three options, basically, whether to go Spurs and how hard I hit Spurs. And when the news came out for me personally, my first reaction was, I don't trust this. I don't trust a lineup where Sun isn't in the team. And I didn't trust also the fact that Sessegnon wasn't expected to start, because he was widely expected to start. So I just felt this is going to get too risky. And so I ended up swerving Spurs altogether. Now, I think it worked out because KDB essentially got 10, Sun got 19. I sort of live better or sleep better knowing that I made the right decision. And I think going KDB, at least for that 1 week, was the right thing. But look, that's what FPL is. It's not always, like you said, about you know, always being 100% correct. It's also going with your gut. So tell us about your wild card.
You know, I think one thing that I appreciate you for, Pros, is sort of me deciding ultimately to forego Barnes. I know people are talking about Barnes now because what we've seen from Leicester is they're, you know, shambolic defensively and just awful, but they're also pretty solid attacking wise. I mean, every single game Leicester seems to start off pretty well. And even this game state against Spurs, I think Leicester played much better in the first 30 minutes or, you know, even a little longer than that. So there is attacking potential here. We just saw how good Madison was. You know, he should be in a different club at the state Leicester is right now. And, you know, I don't think I would be upset with the double up with Barnes, but you can see on Twitter, you can see, you know, just in the fixture ticker, Zaha is probably going to be essential pick. You know, nobody's essential, but with his fixtures from 10 to 16, he's the one, right? And I don't want to miss out on a highly owned player plus talisman against, with penalties against, so be it, not great, but against you know, very good oppositions moving forward. So happy with that pick. The rest of the team is set up really well. You know, it's definitely some question marks here and there, you know, what to do with TAA, what to do with Salah, and most importantly for me, it's to not react, not to get too knee-jerky, because I think I'm well set up, but to really start planning for 13 and beyond, because 13 through 16 will be where I'm going to want probably another City player, where I'm going to, you know, be desperate for the Liverpool players most likely. And so that's kind of my thinking at this point in time, Pros.
Yeah. What we'll do is we'll walk through your team next week as a proxy for a Game Week 8 wildcard and see how you can navigate it. Because what you don't want to do is end up with no City after 13, or you don't want no Liverpool in 12 when they're captainable. It's going to be tricky. So that's something that we'll talk about next week. So backward looking, any decisions that you regret going on your wildcard? Because I think, look, your midfield is pretty perfect. I mean, you've got Zaha and Madison, which are basically the two guys most midfielders will have. Sorry, most wildcarders in Game Week 9 will have. You've got KDB, people have Salah. I don't think there's much in it between the two. You've got Cancelo, Trippier, James. So I think the team is really, really well set up. And I think the differences will be pretty minor. Anything that you're thinking that you could have done differently?
I don't think nothing stands out, which is great, right? So you can nitpick to you know, you can nitpick forever, right? For example, right, I could have gone Gaeta over Pope because of the fact that now I'm doubled up on Newcastle defense, but I went Zuma, and we'll talk about rolling averages in a little bit. West Ham is pretty, pretty good in terms of defense. So he slots in nicely when Trippier has tough fixtures, so I don't have to, you know, be so worried about that double up when the time comes. And so maybe Patterson over Neco Williams, you know, maybe Martinelli I was too bullish on. You know, he obviously, Arsenal did well, but he wasn't as involved as I wanted him to be. So at that point in time, I'm just nitpicking. So I feel pretty confident moving forward with this team, to say the least. Yeah.
Nice. So why don't you tell everyone about your infamous Sun section? Yeah, because in the last video, you didn't talk about it. And a lot of people were like, had you talked about it, maybe we would have picked Sun. So go on then. This is your time. Tell us about what's happening with Sun. Is he a pick going forward or not?
Yeah, I think it's very important to note that I don't think he's he's an essential pick, or what's the right word? I wouldn't be confident saying he's the pick right now. And I'll give sort of, you know, arguments to both sides, but essentially fantastic hat trick, right? 13 minutes, 21 seconds. You know, I think the first hat trick off the bench in about 7 years. So incredible. But Conte has a lot of questions to answer. And there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered, even with this hat trick against Leicester City. The key word here is that this hat trick happened in a 3-5-2. And we've talked about this on the pod, Pros, where Richarlison was brought in to play in the 3-4-3. We really don't think that Conte is going to change from the 3-4-3. And one of the big reasons is they don't have a regista, right? And a regista is someone like a Pirlo, Jorginho, Xabi Alonso, the guy who can, you know, sit right in front of the defense and spread balls across the pitch. And Conte has mentioned this in the past where Brozovic, for example, at Inter Milan, he literally said in an interview, I need a quality pivot player like Brozovic in order for me to play this 3-5-2. Also, the 3-5-2 worked at Inter Milan because they sort of had a big and small combination, which is why I thought Kane and Son would work. But they don't have a regista, and they don't have a Hakimi-type right wing back at this moment in time. So I do not think he's going to revert back to the 3-5-2. I still think he's going to play the 3-4-3. And it's really sad because, a 3-5-2 is ideal for Son, right? He needs that space. And you saw it. As soon as they changed it up, they did really well. So if you look at this, sort of football map that I've showed up here, this is how they build up Spurs, right? They have their two wing backs push up, and they have your three attackers, and they're basically building up with a 3-2 with the two pivots in Højbjerg and Bentancur right in front of the three defense, right? The issue here is that there's so much space between these two in the pivot and all the way, you know, all the attackers up top that they struggle to build up. So what happens is Son, Kane, and, Richarlison, Kulusevski have to come down and receive the ball. Then by the time they come down to get the ball, everyone's read the game already. The defense is coming down to man mark them. And so basically they're struggling to build up from the middle. And then a lot of times you'll see them sit back deep and they have like 9 or 10 men. It's very interesting. The last few games I've seen this happen where Spurs are sitting back super deep. And so they have so much of the pitch to move up forward to, which is why they're struggling to build up. And then, you know, this is a prime example of what they look like when they sit back. And so in this map, you can see what a 3-5-2 looks like and what the regista role does. And as you can see in this 3-5-2, this allows Son and Kane up top to really excel in what they do best, which is, you know, stay up and have all the space in the world and combine really well. So this is a heat map of what Son looked like in a 3-4-3. Granted, it was just 10 minutes. And this is what heat map of what Son looks like in a 3-5-2. Granted, you know, there's so many things at factor here, right? Game state, this and that, right? And, you know,
Leicester had given up, essentially. Exactly. I mean, they were not even tracking back. So basically, I mean, even for the two goals out of the three goals, he could have easily passed to Kane and it would have been a tap-in.
Yeah.
So it didn't need to be a worldly at all. But I guess game state, it does matter. But that's what you get for, you know, what we say, your Salah against tired legs. It was Son against tired legs this time.
Exactly. Against tired legs. So, and you're right. He came into the game not looking to pass. The third goal, he should have passed to Kane 100%. But I think his mood was just like, I need to prove doubters wrong. I need to, you know, he's like a wounded animal right now, right? I think that's the right phrase.
I've never seen him like that. Have you seen him like that for Korea or, you know, anywhere else?
No. You know, like the first goal celebration was also, it was like joy, but it was a relief almost, right? He almost kind of like looked at the ground and it was very interesting. I think it goes to show his mentality is very strong, but he's also, you know, is also a human, right? He, like it's a prideful thing to be sort of alongside Kane and then be benched because he's not performing well. So Conte has a tricky matter up his sleeve, because one side of the coin is, oh, I have this superstar of a player that maybe once in a while I can rest and have him come in as a impact bench player. But you also don't want to do that to your, you know, second best player in the team who you need goals from, right? And the next section, quickly speaking, Pras, is I need to explain to you that I'm sure you'll agree with me. Son and Perisic have to work together in order for Spurs to get to the next level. You have your best wing back in Perisic, and you have your best goal scorer besides Harry Kane in Son. And we already know what Spurs are capable of with Son and Kane, but they have a limit to how far they can reach with that combination and just that attacking pattern of play, right? They relied on them too for the last few seasons. So for them to level up is, you not only need that, but you also need Perisic, Richarlison, Kulusevski, you know, whoever your, you know, right wing back besides Royal is going to be, to really start stepping up and performing and have, you know, 2-3 different attacking patterns essentially moving forward. So I'm very interested to see how this story develops. But basically, you can see that Perisic takes up the space that Son's supposed to occupy when he makes those runs behind, as you can see in this photo here. Whereas when Perisic pulls wide, this allows Son to make those spaces in the circle there. And a lot of times, Sessegnon is very good at this. He'll pull out really wide and create space for Son. And this is fine, right? Because Perisic also does pull out wide. But what's happening right now is that Perisic has become a crossing machine. And he's always looking for... You know, when Kulusevski was benched the last three games, I think there's a reason to it. It was for Richarlison to come in, because Kane and Richarlison are getting these crosses from Perisic from the far post. This is just like the thing you keep seeing. The quality of crosses is so incredible that he'll just keep crossing across the channel to the far post. And he'll cut back very little to Son. And I'm not saying this as a biased Son fan. This is just me observing. Why is he not cutting back? Why is he not giving the ball to Son? And so this was happening a lot. And for this to balance out, that means that on the right side, Royal needs to be doing the same thing. Royal needs to be able to cross into the opposite end where Kulusevski is, and also Perisic is, because he's also very good with the ball in the air and with his head, right? But Royal
isn't great as a header, so that's why he can't cross the ball for... I mean, basically, I'm trying to mirror what Richarlison would do for Perisic versus what Son would do for... So it doesn't quite work, maybe, yeah. Which is why when Perisic was playing on the right side, he dropped Son, mm-hmm. and he started Richarlison on the other side, where Kulusevski was on this side. So maybe we're trying to kind of get into how this will work, but what I want to get now is, mm-hmm. where does it go from here? Yep, I mean, it's not like Perisic is going to get dropped. Did you see how Richarlison was sulking when he was getting subbed off for Son? I mean, even then, can you imagine? Like, you know, he's not going to go away. Kulusevski is not going to go away. So what does it mean for his minutes?
Yeah, so it just goes to show that when Richarlison started on the left, he struggled a lot, right? And Son has struggled in that starting position as well, because essentially that left role is their man mark throughout the game. They're a lot of times they're taken out of the game, and same thing happened with Richarlison. And so... Moving forward, I don't think Son loses his spot, right? He's going to continue to start, in my, you know, opinion.
Obviously, he'll continue, but we're talking whether he gets reliably 5 starts out of 5, or is it now basically become 4 out of 5?
I think
that's
what we're saying. I think it's 5 out of 5, but I think his minutes are reduced. I think it's still Kulusevski and Richarlison on the right fighting for it. Perisic on the right just didn't work. It just didn't work, partially because Sanchez started and not Romero. So maybe that dynamic switches things up. But I think that Perisic will continue to start on the left. And eventually Conte has to figure out this puzzle between Son and Perisic. Basically, both of them are making these inside runs, and they're just unable to combine together. But you know, Perisic got that yellow card after Son scored, because he came into the pitch after he got subbed off to celebrate. So it just goes to show that, like, he also wants to make this work, and I think there's that frustration factor between those two. So we'll see how this develops. But for now, I think Son is a good pick, because he's had every season he's had slumps where he doesn't score for 5, 6, 7, 8 games even. and then he'll go on to score probably, you know, 20, 30 something goals total for the season. So it's there. He's a streaky player. I'm the first to admit it. And Arsenal is just the perfect matchup for him, because that's where, you know, he's going to attack on the counter. He's has a very good record against Arsenal. But I do proceed with caution, because Arsenal have also leveled up, right? They've stepped up from what they were last year. And, you know, they had a heartbreaking loss to Spurs at the end of last season, where, you know, it kind of spiraled down to not making it to the top four. So this is going to be a revenge match for the Gunners. So I'm very interested to see how he does. Think if it's going to be cagey, but I don't think it's a bad matchup for him. But moving forward, we need more data, and I would not confidently say bring in Son at this point in time.
Yeah, I hear you. I think the best quote for everyone listening is Andy thinks Son is a good pick. So there you go.
Breaking news. I went on there, but I have more stuff. It's just basically we need more data. We need to see how this Conte formation and everything folds out to be for us to assess all.
So for your own personal team, for your own personal team, you're happy. You're going to keep him. No KDB, no Salah, right? For the moment.
No, the only thing I'm thinking about Salah, but probably not. Probably it just doesn't make sense for me to go to Salah for just one game. Unless I decide to, you know, obviously I could captain him, makes sense, but it's a tough one.
I mean, you wouldn't go just one game. I mean, would you just go Salah one game and bring him out again?
Probably not. I probably keep him, but why I say it's one game is because it's I'm looking mainly at that fixture to captain him, and then you know, I just continue to have him until, I guess, game week 13. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good. Anything else on your wildcard? Today there was some news that Isak may have a niggle, but that sounds like it's an international break injury, so nothing to worry about. Sounds like it's just precautionary. But this is the problem with international breaks. So you sort of are crossing fingers that your players come back healthy. I wish that that is the case. So, yeah.
Couple things. Jesus, obviously, on four yellow cards, right, Pros? And then who was the other player you mentioned?
So off the popular picks, Jesus and Gordon are the ones on four yellow cards. And that continues until game week 19. So there's a lot of time. I feel like there will be a point where one of them is getting suspended. But I always caution at this point the Diego Costa story. Yep. For those who didn't play then, he was on four yellow cards for about six, seven, eight game weeks. He kept scoring every week and nobody got him because everybody thought he's on four yellow cards. So it's good to know. But it's not a reason not to go for somebody. Yep. I agree that it can be a little bit painful if you're relying on that player. He's already blanking in game week 11. So just, you know, watch out for that.
This podcast is sponsored by Paramount Plus, where Champions League soccer is back. 9 months of heart-stopping, hold-your-breath exhilaration starts on September the 6th with the biggest stars and top teams across Europe. Watch every match from the group stage through to the knockout rounds as Benzema and Real Madrid defend their title against the likes of Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, PSG, Barcelona and more. Don't miss a single second with Paramount Plus starting from September the 6th.
Yep. Nothing else. I guess I have a question for you is what do you think about Martinelli?
It's a topic for next week. But look, gotcha. I think he's great. Arsenal are looking great. He's nailed. But I feel like the 6 to 8 million category has got a lot of players. So in my wild card, it'll come down to who do I want to have, who doesn't blank, versus a player like Martinelli who does blank and plays Liverpool. So I don't want to say I'm definitely off Martinelli. I'm looking at ways to have him. But if I'm given a choice, who do I want to keep between Cancelo and Martinelli? Definitely, I think it's Cancelo who I want to keep, because you have to look at the opportunity of how hard is it to get to the player. Getting to Cancelo, if you have got basically a cheapo defender as your fourth defender, is very, very hard. Getting to a Martinelli when you have Zaha, Madison, any other midfielder is very, very easy. So I look at it as who can I jump on easily after the blank? And I think Martinelli, no problem, but it could be that Cancelo could be a problem if Trent is doing well, if James is doing terrifically under Potter, Trippier is doing fine. So I wouldn't have the funds to go to Cancelo that easily. So that's the thinking why I'm talking about no Martinelli. It's got nothing to do with Martinelli. The guy has been really great. In fact, I am a big proponent of Martinelli because back in last season's wildcard, which was game week 26, I had Martinelli and I haven't sold him since. And I've had him basically, I haven't started him every week, obviously, but I just feel for his price. He's great.
Pross, I can hear it in your voice. You're itching for next week to come because you sound very excited about your wild card, and I'm very excited to hear about your.
It's nothing earth shattering. The thing is with the wild card, those who are tinkering, I get really irritated by seeing comments of, and it's from both sides, right? Wildcard mm-hmm. 8 people will go, oh, look, Wildcard 9 is exactly like my team. Look how smart I am because I picked the perfect team. And then Wildcard 9 guys will go, oh, I'm going to pick a different team just because I want to be different from Wildcard 8. Forget about that. Yeah. You need to get that out of your head. Wildcard 8 had a lot of advantages. A lot of people were basically forced into wildcarding. So anyway, you didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. And so if you made the right calls, I saw wildcard teams that got 55 points or 52 points. I saw wildcard teams that got 75 points. So it really wasn't a no-brainer to pick the right players. Some people didn't go KDB. Some people went Kane. Some people didn't have, for example, they had Bowen, not a Madison. So now that they're looking to get a Madison, they don't have a Zaha already in place. So there were a lot of things that didn't work in some drafts, like Emerson they had starting, but Emerson is now not going to be a reliable player going forward. Nico Williams has shown that he's lost set pieces, and Nottingham Forest are not looking great. So these are some popular picks that I would say are looking a little bit shaky, but this will happen in any wildcard. So game week 9 wildcarders will make their own new mistakes. So let's not go into this mentality of this versus this. In fact, when I'll talk about game week 9 wildcard, you have to tell me if I'm getting into this mindset of I'm trying to be different for the sake of being different.
I totally get you. Yeah. I have a question for you though. Game week 8 wildcard and game week 9 wildcard is very close to each other. Granted, there's the international break, but if you think about last season, there was the game week 26 wildcard and then, which was, I think, very popular, right? And then there was the game week sort of, let's say 34, 35 wildcard as well. And the way to compare it was sort of game week 26 to game week 30, how well was that wild card set up? And then, game week 34 to game week 38, you compare those kind of groups of four game weeks to see, if anything, compare those wild cards. But for a situation like this, is it, very hard to really distinguish between what game weeks you're looking at? And as you mentioned, is it more just getting more information and obviously team dependent on whether you pulled the trigger or not? And also a lot of non-wildcarders did really well, this game week as well. So how do you assess this, game week 8 to game week 9 if you had to?
Yeah. So again, at the risk of essentially just saying 5 minutes ago that you shouldn't compare the two and go 8 versus 9. Look, firstly, second wildcard is always a strategic wildcard. It's a wild card where you play in conjunction with your free hit or you in conjunction with a double game week or a bench boost. So it's a completely different strategy. So you cannot compare second wild card to the first wild card. The first wild card is supposed to be essentially how you can navigate. Now, in this case, some of the blanks. So some people basically played it because they were putting out 6 players in game week 8. So some people are now using it like myself to get ahead of the group for the game week 11 blank. Or the tougher fixtures, because between game week 9 and game week 12, essentially Arsenal play Liverpool play Arsenal, Man City play Liverpool. So it's a very tricky phase where the big teams play each other. And so that's something that you can navigate with your wildcard, but the value of the first wildcard is really low. We're trying to play up in our heads how big the wildcard is, because of the fact that in game week 16, it's again reset, right? So if you're making mistakes, like people who went Emerson, in game week 8 wildcard, not a big deal because you can get someone else in your game week 16 wildcard. So you'll have unlimited transfers again. Normally, game week 1, the first wildcard is very important because that takes you right until game week 30, 36 even. So it has tremendous value. But I think at this point, I remember Sertal...
You mean the second wildcard, not the first?
Yes. So the second wildcard has a lot of value. The first wildcard does... Yeah. The first one doesn't have any value for me.
Go ahead. You remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was going to say from Sertab's pod, which is the one he does. And he talked about the fact that this wildcard will probably have just about 10 points of value. So let's not overplay it. Let's just sort of get a good team that you can navigate the blanks with, and that should be good.
Very, very interesting. I didn't realize this. I didn't realize the second wild card had much more tremendous value than the first wild card. Very interesting to learn something new here. But also, my question to you, I guess while we're on this meta talk, not really a question, but I think it's important for us to say, Pros, that a lot of managers might be feeling down, and this is the highs and lows of FPL. And, you know, a lot of people might, you know, are worried about their 2 million, 3 million, 4, 5 million rank, right? And it's not because you're a bad manager. It's not because, you know, you're making the wrong decisions. These are just things happen. But I just want to say that the point skew between, I think, 1 million and 2 million is just 19 points right now. And between 100K and 1 million is also very close. And same thing with 2 million, 3 million. Everything is super bunched up yet, which is why we keep saying rank is irrelevant, why we don't have our ranks up here yet. And so just a word of, you know, easy for me to say after a good week, but I just want to keep saying that keep chugging along. This is a marathon. This is not something you can, you know, recover in one game week by going super maverick. You just have to sort of keep up, and we're going to have massive doubles coming up, and those are the times where you can really make up ground. And as you mentioned, also the second wild card has tremendous value. So, you know, I think it's important to keep tugging along and see where that can get you. Plus, we have another wild card after the World Cup. So very interesting dynamics coming up this year.
Yep.
Okay.
By the way, to elaborate, Certab's pod is called FPL Optimized, just to correctly give him a shout out.
Yep. Great guy as well. So shout out FPL Optimized. Also, now we have the rolling averages from FPL Chase. Chase, obviously, has appeared on our pod multiple times in terms of his charts. Just such a beautiful chart and easy to understand, easy to read. You know, you just have to look through it a couple times to really see what's going on. You know, just right off the top of the bat, Man City, Liverpool, Tottenham. This is 10-game rolling averages, so for XG. So these are attacking stats for 10-game bunches, 10-game groups. Man City, Liverpool, Tottenham up top. You can see Newcastle trending really well and very high XG, team XG, 1.5, 1.6 in August and September. So, you know, it's a good indication of a very strong team now, and a strong team since Eddie Howe has taken the reins, since they've, you know, have had a lot of money and this and that. Chelsea obviously trending down, but there's multiple factors to it. New management, Abramovich issue, you know, new owners, blah, blah, blah. So anything that stands out to you in particular here for the XG in terms of rolling averages?
So first thing to say is there's no promoted teams here because they haven't played 10 games so far. So that's one thing to point out. So the numbers generally look better for everybody because there's three. They generally look worse. So, you know, there are three worse teams than Southampton, for example. The other thing to say is, this is to basically, a lot of people talk about data picking, right? Somebody will put out a stat in the last seven games, no player has scored more points than X, which is so random because you're just picking seven because that player hauled seven game weeks ago. So this helps because there is no sampling going on here. This is just 10 game weeks every month at the end of every month. And so this helps you look at the trend of where the teams are going. So Man City, I think nothing to say, best team in the league in terms of attack. And this sort of tells you that when you have a nailed striker for that team, you captain the striker, as long as you think the striker is starting. So whenever you're going against that, you know that this is, you know, you're taking on the crowd because it is the natural pick. Liverpool, so I think this was an interesting one. So Liverpool, of course, over the last, I would say, 6, 7 months, 8 months even, have been around 2xG. So there's nothing here to suggest that this season there's been a drop-off in terms of attacking stats. Now, I caution that this includes the Bournemouth game, and that sort of always brings up the numbers a little bit. So if you were to adjust for that, maybe it's a drop-off to 1.7, 1.8. I'm just sort of just very roughly thinking. But that's equivalent to how they were performing at the end of last season. So from a Liverpool perspective, you would think that there's nothing fundamentally wrong. Thiago would be back, so the team should look to do better in attack. Spurs are continuing to do better under Conte this week. So, I mean, look at that. I mean, a year ago, they used to be a 1 XG team, and now they're close to a 1.5, 1.6 XG team, which is very, very good. You already talked about Newcastle, who are as attacking as an Arsenal, which is very impressive because Arsenal themselves are looking great. And Arsenal's XG this season is slightly up simply also because of the good fixtures. I mean, the team is looking great, but, you know, fixtures do play a part in how that is coming through. I think Brighton, you have to forget about what you're looking at because it's a new manager. You wanted to say something about the new manager as well, right?
Apparently, Juventus wanted to sign him as well, which shows his quality. And also, I'm reading about him, and it seems like he's a very attack-minded manager. So right off the bat...
Possession-based attack-minded.
Yeah, right off the bat, it makes you think that, sure, they're going to be more attacking, but also maybe defensively weaker, but... Again, we just don't know. This is something you shouldn't assess based off, you know, what this type of manager is. We have to see how this actually plays out. And I think ideally in the first few games, they're not going to change much. I don't think they, even though they have international break, why fix something that's not broken? So I'm very interested to see how this story develops. Granted, their fixtures are not great, so we're not going to be owning them anyway.
Yeah. I mean, one interesting part about the postponements in Game Week 7 and some teams missing out in Game Week 8 is that they will have a month off. So these guys won't have a month off with their manager, but teams like Crystal Palace will have a complete 1 month to sort of reset whether they're looking poor defensively or some of the tactical elements of the team. So it's almost like you may even say they would be rusty in their first game, but then I think over time they'll be rested. So you can expect a stronger second half of this first half before the World Cup. So that's about it in terms of disappointments. I think Chelsea is a big disappointment, but we already knew that. There's a reason then now they have a new manager. So it's almost like a clean slate again on how Chelsea will look. I would almost say that you can take a Brighton XG as a proxy for a Chelsea XG. So therefore you would expect an attacking improvement for sure. Man United, again, open, fresh slate. Leicester, we keep talking about Leicester being a good team, but over the last 5 months, they've been a pretty much middling 1XG team. That is nothing to write home about. It's good, but it may not be Vardy 9 million worth good. Maybe a Madison worth good because of the fixtures, but they're not a long-term pick team. Change of manager, of course, things can change, but that's where we are with Leicester. So I would, again, back to our conversation on doubling up with Barnes and Madison. If you're doing it very specifically temporarily, okay. But it's not a long-term viable
over average. Yep, yep. But granted, even if it's 1.1 XG, we know where the goal and assist is usually likely to come from for a team like Leicester. So
So that was it. I think nothing else to say here. I would be curious to see how Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest, and others come in. They will come in next month because they will be once the October month data is uploaded. But I think for now, this is just a nice trending for people to see. It sorts off any noise, as I mentioned. So let's go to XG conceded.
Cool. Yep. So we have the XG conceded out here. For those that may be unfamiliar, it's XG conceded basically a good indication of defensive team stats. So first thing that stands out to me is West Ham and how high they are. So talk to me about West Ham. Why? Are you surprised to see them so high up in
very surprised. Very surprised. I mean, 0.8 XG conceded is fairly, you know, very good. So, it's not even the fixtures because they've had difficult fixtures going into the season. I mean, I don't know if it's a case of David Moyes sort of changing the way they work. Maybe that has had an impact on Bowen as well from an attacking perspective, because if you look at the attacking data for West Ham on the previous slide, they're bottom four. Yep. Of course, there's no promoted teams here. But yeah, so they've almost gone back to, I mean, those who watched Premier League 10 years ago, even longer, there was a David Moyes Everton philosophy where those teams are very, very solid, but could, you know, were good for a goal in the game. So he used to be a solid manager. There's a reason why Man United picked him as Sir Alex Ferguson's successor. So for me, he's always been a defense first manager. It's for the first time showing up. So people who've got Emerson, Zuma, Soufal, I think they're shrewd picks. Now, the only issue with West Ham, as we've talked about in the past, is that their fixture in Game Week 11 is Liverpool. And that's the 1 week where you'll definitely need them because both Man City and Arsenal blank. That is the only issue with a West Ham defender. But I think as a standalone pick, it's a very good one.
You mean Blinkist game week 12, Bras?
Game week 12, fine, yeah. Yeah, okay. 11 is the Liverpool Man City game.
West Ham, yeah. Okay, gotcha. Okay, I mean, teams to target by looking at this. Everton, obviously, at the way bottom there. Leeds is there.
Again, no promoted teams, but Everton is a strange one because if you look at the team playing, this is where eye test and data sometimes doesn't match, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at Everton with Tarkowski, with Cody, if you look at how they played against West Ham, how they defended against Liverpool, they look solid. They look like it's a team that's figured it out or at least getting better in the way they defend. They look bottom here, so I don't really know what to say on Everton.
As you say that, I'm looking at it's 1.4 and at the bottom.
That looks
right,
terrible.
So,
that looks terrible. And look, one argument is even though they're conceding the XG, Pickford has been really good in goal. A lot of the XG has been built up by shots from outside the box and Pickford has been saving them. But a purist analytics FC will tell you it doesn't matter if you're accumulating XG, if it's through 100 shots outside the box and they're all 0.1 XG, then you still expect to score one out of those 10 shots. So it doesn't matter how the XG is accumulated. It is being accumulated. So it's one to watch. I don't think people should dive into a Patterson that easily. I mean, of course, for price you could, but or Pickford. But yeah, it's a worry. I think other than that, teams to target, the three promoted teams that you don't even see here.
Yeah, also a moment of applause for those who brought in Luca Dean, Aston Villa at the bottom there, 1.5, 1.2 XGC. And, you know, he came out finally with a decent, I think, 7 or 8 pointer or so, or maybe even 9.
He was in our free hit draft, you remember, last week.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So we backed him to do well. But
I considered him for a bit, but he's just too expensive for the system I had in my team or formation I had in my team. So,
and now he's injured.
He's injured again?
Yeah. He got, he's actually broken, he's fractured a bone or something.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, wow. It's not great. If you owned him, you're back to Dean trolling you. But I don't want to, sort of, the guy's injured, so we shouldn't make fun of him.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. But that is hilarious.
yeah. And then Leicester. So Leicester stood out here. So Leicester are not even in the top bottom six. So we're talking about Leicester being really terrible, but they've had, I think, 10 or 11 XG conceded this season so far, but they've conceded 23 odd goals. So you could argue, like Andy actually tweeted, Andy, let's talk FPL, that you could argue that they've been a little bit unlucky or the goalkeeper has been terrible. And maybe it's a combination of the two. But yeah, I'm not ruling out a Warden Iverson double up in goal.
Oh, God.
I'm not ruling it out. I think that's really it. I don't think, I mean, couple of comments on the promoted side. So Bournemouth actually don't look too bad after Parker has left. So Scott Parker has typically been a little bit more, I don't want to say attacking, but he was, you know, he's not a great defensive coach. So it looks a little bit better in the new setup. So Bournemouth against Newcastle, for example, I mean, they shut them out pretty well. I don't think Isak had much to do apart from the penalty. So that's one to watch out for, that, you know, maybe Bournemouth isn't the team to target, but definitely Leicester, definitely Forest, and to a certain extent, Fulham. And Bournemouth are there. But don't just sort of be convinced that it's the same Bournemouth that lost 9-0 to Liverpool.
I actually think Scott Parker is more defensive of a coach and much more conservative.
Just not very good.
Just not very good.
It just wasn't very good.
But at the same time, like, you know, I saw Solanke in your draft last week, and I'm just not convinced I would want to go there, especially with the presence of different attacking assets or striker assets that are emerging. And
Who's your third striker after Mitrovic or Haller?
Who's a popular guy?
Everyone keeps talking about 4-3-3. I want to go 4-3-3.
Tony.
Tony, look at his fixtures. I mean, fine, he's got great, a really good accumulated XG over the first 7 game weeks, but I don't love his fixtures going forward, apart from the one in game week 9. So then who?
I mean,
unless you go Kane up top.
Yeah, Kane, I guess, but I guess Solanke's an option because of the great fixture run from here on out. But so you'd have to start him every week, correct?
No, of course not. He would be my first bench. He would only come on game week 11 and 12, maybe bench Cancelo and Haaland. And of course, in an emergency, if needed. But he's not a starter. That I agree with.
Okay, then that's a game changer. I thought he's in your team to start every week, but I think he's, what, 5.7? So, yeah, I guess if you can afford him as a bench member. And, yes, I copyright Baker. I don't want to go over this because I listen to his pod every, you know, Monday or Sunday whenever it comes out, and sometimes you hear things and it kind of leaks out. And also, shout out to Adam, who gave me a shout out on his pod about Sun, and also he took the points as well. So cheers to that. Yeah,
only crazy madmen like you and Adam went for him.
Very happy about it.
Nice.
Okay, I think 45 minutes, Pros, so that should be good.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, all set up for next week. I'll have my wildcard draft to discuss. We will discuss your team a little bit more in detail in terms of how to navigate 11 and 12 so people can get an idea for their teams. But yeah, let's get back to the break.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening. Please do check out FPL Chase on Twitter with these fantastic graphs and charts. So thank you for that. It was a pleasure catching up with you this week, and we will be back next week with Process Game Week 9 wildcard while also talking about hot topics prior to the return of FPL. So enjoy the break, you know, take your mind off FPL, but just remember Sonny had a 19-point haul, and we'll be back next week.
Bye.